What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and you know what's more American than America's 250th birthday? Supporting American-owned companies like SpinQuest, America's number one social casino with over 1,000 games like Live Dealer Blackjack and Craps. They're offering new users a $30 coin package for just $10. Go to SpinQuest.com and sign up today.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
And welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad, Marquise Munson, taking you through this Tuesday morning here in Nashville, Tennessee. Good to have the band back together. Munson back from vacation. And let me tell you, he's looking good, Joe. Looks real good over there.
He's got the mask already. He's got the, what is that hat?
It's a Jordan hat.
That's a cool looking hat.
A Jordan hat. Okay. Man,
you should have seen it yesterday, Munson. We were talking about The Last Dance. And I made Joe aware that the Jordan brand logo is now on the Pistons jerseys, and he is so disgusted by
it. Yes, it is. Hey, Joe.
Rock bottom.
How do you feel about that, man?
Yeah, that's just a disastrous franchise. So
what's crazy is, so I flew there. So I went on a plane, you know, obviously social distancing and whatever. You know, I always have to implement that because I don't want people to think.
Make that clear.
I'm tweeting you.
Yeah, I don't want people to think I'm just living young, wild, and free. Like, I was on a plane and sitting next to my lady and then nobody else next to us. So we're and with our mask on. And so I'm a very nervous flyer. Like, I don't like to fly. That's just period. I'd rather drive than fly. So I had to, you know, like, watch something to get my mind off of the fact that I'm flying. Yeah. So I watched The Last Dance, and I stopped on the episode where the Pistons and the Bulls were going at it, and they beat up Jordan and the Jordan rule and all these different things. And it just, like, I love those times, and I love the Pistons. I know a lot of people don't like the Pistons. Isaiah Thomas is one of my favorite point guards outside of the fact that he's kind of a jerk. But other than that, like, that Pistons team was pretty good. And Chuck Daly's, like, probably, like, if I can rank my favorite coaches of all time, like, top 10 easily for me. So, and this is an era that I didn't even grow up in, but I went back to it and looked at it and saw, you know, how good he was, and he's absolutely amazing. So, like, it, you know, Joe, it's just, you know, let the Jordan stuff go, man. It's
no, I like, hey, it was a good doc. Jordan's an unbelievable player. Again, we talked yesterday. He did a great job of bouncing back from getting his butt kicked 3 out of 4 playoff series against
so
the Pistons.
Salty. Joe,
he worked out. You know, the thing is, too, like, I'm glad you said about the Pistons. One thing that does bother me is people think they were just, like, bashing people. I mean, they were really good at basketball. Yeah. They could shoot and pass and things.
Yeah, they were good. Like,
they had Hall of Famers on that team.
Like,
you know?
Don't sleep on Joe Dumars. Like,
Joe
come
Dumars
on. Like, Dumars was a great player. But he even him, like, he gets that stigma because he played on that Pistons team. But I'm like, Joe Dumars was probably, like, the nicest
Joe
guy.
Joe Dumars and John Sally were both, like, super nice guys.
Yeah, they're super nice guys.
So, some of the other guys weren't.
Exactly. But, like, Bill Lambert and you know, you know, all of them were, you know, majority of them were pretty bad.
But one thing that I think hopefully people also got from that doc is, you know, I think the ultimate glue guy slash role player in sports history, I'm serious, in sports history is Dennis Rodman. And I think Jordan has 3 rings, not 6, if not 4, him.
Yeah.
I really believe that. He was – so I hope that came through other than the whole, like, having to pull him out of, like, Vegas with Carmen Electra. I mean, it was tough. But as a player, like, that's the thing. He could just not practice, show up, and you can guard anybody. You can switch anything on defense. He'll get you 20 rebounds. He won't take a shot, and it's incredible.
And so, I noticed
– I hope people realize that from the doc.
Like, while watching the doc, it kind of slipped my mind, but I remember – him talking about, like, he felt when Scottie Pippen came back, he felt like he was the third guy again. So then he went back to being normal Dennis Rodman, who would go to Atlanta City. So if Scottie Pippen would have just sat out that whole season, he was comfortable being, like, the second man to Jordan. And, like, he fit that role to where he was like, I'm going to be squeaky clean. I'm just going to be the second man to Jordan finally and all this. And then Scottie came back. He was like, all right. Back to Dennis Rodman again.
Going like, back to Vegas, baby.
Going to Vegas with Carmen Electra. See you guys later. I'm going to go wrestle, by the way, after this season's over with, against Karl Malone, by the way. So, yeah, that, you know, so Dennis Rodman.
The worm, baby.
The worm. Interesting character, but he was a great player.
Gotta love him.
Well, fellas, we had some great news yesterday from an NHL standpoint. The NHL came out probably about an hour after we got off the air yesterday and said, from the testing period of July 18th through the 25th, I think they tested 4,256 different people, different tests, and zero of them were positive. Just fantastic news for the NHL. Remember, this is before they get into the bubble. So right. Once you get there, we've talked about just getting there in Edmonton and Toronto and feeling good about yourself. Well, all indications are that they've gotten there in Edmonton and Toronto, and there are no cases of COVID-19, which is outstanding news. There's not a ton of cases of COVID-19 in Edmonton and Toronto anyway, and from the pictures I've seen of what that bubble looks like in the NHL, specifically in Edmonton, I think the NHL's done a great job of locking that thing down. So could not have asked, I think, for a better start to this bubble experience if you're the NHL.
Well, and if you want to take this to the NFL discussion, of course, camp, you know, for the Titans technically starts today. You know, the Preds were here. They were here in town, and it was the same thing. Like, you're going to go to work, you're going to work out, and then counting on you to, you know, avoid people and be safe. And so now the difference is it's about 30 people versus 80 people
right
here with the Titans. But they lived here. They got it done. They got to Edmonton all good. So now that was like two nervous – or what was it, three, I guess, with 3 weeks here, especially yeah when they're actually working out together and all that.
Right.
You're like, okay, just get it through and go. The difference here is it's going to be – more than that with this many players, then you cut to 53, and then it's all through a season that you're counting on that. It's much different, but at least it shows you can get that done in a period of time in a place that has a lot of cases going on.
And we talked about, you know, kind of the uncertainty moving forward with MLB and NFL. I feel great about the NHL not only being to start this, but to finish it. Like, I think the path is clear at this point for the NHL to be able to get this thing done at Edmonton and Toronto.
Yeah, I guess basically what you somehow, you just hope from outside the bubble to in the bubble, you know, someone working, I get Tim Hortons for free, John yeah Hines says yesterday. That sounds amazing.
Very good.
I used to go to Tim Hortons a lot in Michigan. You know, you could always have someone come in from outside, I guess, potentially, or it could come in from outside. One guy that, I mean, it's anything possible.
Yeah.
It's not like completely airtight, no chance of something, but boy, you feel pretty good about where it is right now. And yeah, even the NBA right now. You know, the bubble has been violated, but it still looks
it's been violated by people who are just craving wings and
must be some real good chicken wings.
Man, look, Magic City, I've never been there, you know, but they must have some great food because Lou Williams is willing to sacrifice 10 days of quarantine for those chicken wings. So those must be the best chicken wings he has ever had. So
now Lou Williams and Kendrick Perkins are in a beef. It's Kendrick Perkins, like, after he retired from the NBA, that's all he does now.
You know what? I think Kendrick Perkins just hates people.
I think he does.
Like, it's just
he's kind of mean.
Yeah, it's just a thing. Like, him and Kyrie had a thing earlier.
Him and KD had one.
Him and KD had a thing earlier. Now he's getting into it with Lou Williams, and it's just like, yeah, I just think Kendrick Perkins just hates people. Like, he hates people, basketball people mainly, but people in general. He's a mean person.
I'm gonna have to catch up on this Twitter feud. I missed that.
Well, basically, Kendrick Perkins was judging, you know, Lou Williams for deciding to go to a strip club to get chicken wings and risk his team. And I get Kendrick Perkins' point because you got to think that you're willing to risk, and the season's gonna start this week. So you're willing to risk 10 days of quarantine, which you're going to miss games from your team, all to get some chicken wings
yeah
from a strip club.
Like, he's not going to be able to play against the
yeah
Lakers.
Yeah, like, I think what Kendrick Perkins was trying to say, but his mean face and his mean voice just doesn't help his cause when he says things. I think what he was really trying to say was, in a nice guy voice, that you are putting your team's – at risk when you do things like that. Not to mention you're abusing your power about leaving the bubble, because Zion had to leave for a whole different reason that was personal, and it was a family matter that he had to take care of. Same thing for Patrick Beverly. I think he left for the same thing. He had a family matter he had to take care of.
Right.
So you're abusing your power to leave the bubble. If all they tell you is, if you leave the bubble, you're going to stay in for 10 days. I'm like, oh, okay. Well, I guess I'm leaving. Bye. I'll see you in 10 days, and I'll quarantine for 10 days, whatever. And so he's abusing that power. And that's all Kendrick Perkins was saying, that a guy like Zion, who is 20, 21 years old, shouldn't act like, or should be the one acting like that, rather than a guy that's been in this league for 16 years. That's what he's trying to say.
Yeah.
But his mean face,
that's fair.
Ignored it, because he's like, he looks all scruffy and grumpy. So it's like, you left the bubble, you left your team down. So he looks bad saying it.
Well,
but that's
news,
what he meant.
Good news for the NHL is, especially when you're talking about Edmonton, I'm going to doubt there are very many, you know, popular strip clubs and wing restaurants in Edmonton, Alberta. Just my guess. Just based on what I know about Edmonton.
Yeah, I've never been there. I don't know.
Terry Crisp once told me that you can watch your dog run away from you for 3 days in Edmonton. That's how he described it.
There's got to be a good poutine place, though.
I mean,
poutine.
Sure.
There's got to be.
But Toronto could probably be a little difficult.
Toronto could be a problem.
Toronto is, there would be more temptation there.
That's why I'm glad that none of these bubbles are happening in Vegas, because we would probably get way more stories
than this.
Nothing
would ever get done.
Nothing will get done. And the season will not be complete if they do this in Vegas, because it's all the temptation in the world is in Vegas. There's plenty of spots Lou Williams can buy chicken wings from in Vegas.
None of them.
So that's the big difference. So, you know, and I think that's all he's trying to say is like, and that's what we said earlier about players just being responsible and you know, teammates, holding your teammates accountable for, like, if you're Kawhi Leonard or Paul George, you got to be like, Lou, like, just eat what we
to
got
go
here.
Chicken wings.
Yeah, just eat this dry chicken we got here. You don't need to go to Magic City to go get chicken wings. I'm pretty sure that's not the only reason he went, but that's the reason that I'm going
with.
That's
the reason he gave.
I mean, I hope he got like a month's supply at least, you know? How big are their fridges, you know?
Like, but,
like, at what point is the amount of chicken wings that he got worth the quarantine you have to go through following?
Yeah. Like, imagine Doc Rivers. Like, what did Doc Rivers say? Like, do you just tell Doc Rivers that you're going to Magic City to go get chicken wings? Because I'm pretty sure Doc Rivers would have said, man, if you don't get back in that room in that bubble, like, get back in there, man. You're not going to Magic City to go get chicken wings. Go eat that dry chicken and whatever they're serving here and just enjoy it. There you go. Like, you don't have to, you know, go all the way to Atlanta to go get wings. I'm just saying.
I'm mad as a fan, you know. I'm so excited about this game Thursday, and
Lou Williams is a key part
player
of the team.
Yeah.
He is probably, if I can rank the players on that team, he's probably the third, fourth best player on that team.
Oh yeah.
So it's a big loss, and this is the difference. Like, we can be mad if your team loses a player because of that reason. I can understand being frustrated. But if a player just decides not to play at all, then you shouldn't be frustrated. That's the limbo that we're in. Be mad at those guys.
Like, once you've made the decision to go, don't miss time because you're going to get chicken wings.
I'm not gonna lie. I'm not gonna lie. I'm gonna have to drive to Atlanta now.
Those chicken wings
must be pretty good. those chicken wings must be the best chicken wings on the planet. So I might have to make a trip there. Lou Williams gave me
maybe on something.
Yeah, he gave me a new food recommendation that I have to now try. So thank you, Lou Williams, but stay in a bubble, please, or NBA campus, or whatever they're calling it. Stay there.
When we come back, we are just a few days away from meaningful Nashville Predators hockey. I'm excited. I know all of you are excited as well. But what should the expectations be for this Predators team in Edmonton? We'll get into that next. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexrode here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. That was Predators head coach John Hines speaking at his media availability yesterday, talking about the style of play that he expects once action picks up for real here this weekend in Edmonton and in Toronto when the NHL returns to play. Welcome back into Morning Drive. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rexrode, Marquise Munson taking you through this Tuesday morning. And Joe, it got me thinking yesterday, this is real. They got an exhibition game on Thursday against the Dallas Stars, and then Sunday, game one against the Arizona Coyotes
for all the marbles. The qualifying round begins. You're playing for a spot, I guess, technically to get into the playoffs, even though this is essentially a playoff series against the Arizona Coyotes. What should the expectations be for this Preds team? Like, what are we going to consider a successful run for them in Edmonton? Because I asked that question. It's hard for me to answer it because you don't really know who they're going to be playing if they get past Arizona and what the injury situation is. Like, there's a ton of factors involved here. But we've talked for years, so ever since they went to the final in 2017, about how they should be a Stanley Cup contender. So if you get bounced in the first round or maybe, heck, I'm just assuming you get past Arizona, you lose the round after that. Is that a success? Like how do we determine what's a success for this Predators team in Edmonton?
Well, I think we can all agree that if they don't beat Arizona, it's absolutely not a success.
Oh, no. No question.
So you have to start there and get to the normal playoff of 16 teams left, right? 16 teams playing for the Stanley Cup. That's making the playoffs. I mean, this is a playoff. It's a tournament. It's a year like none before or none after, hopefully. But you're not in the playoffs, really, until you win this series.
Right.
And they were, of course, they were in the eighth spot, right? They were in the eighth spot when this pause. So they were in. So that's what it would be. It's hard because if you ask that question in October, I think you'd say, I would have said, well, this team, I don't think, I mean, this team is built and is paid like a team that should make the conference finals.
Yeah.
Now, then your expectations get altered through a year like this. They have to, but now it's been this long pause, and it's like, there's still a lot of talent on this team, and what if this guy gets going, and this line gets going, and one or the other goalie gets hot? Could they make a run? Sure. What is successful? That's really hard. But to me, I don't think it's just beating Arizona and then just getting bounced from there. I don't think you can call that successful. Again, are we judging it based on how they played all year and kind of just naturally lowering your expectations, or are we judging it based on paper what they should be?
That's what I'm judging. And look, I'll be honest with you. I feel better, and maybe this is not justified at all. I don't know. But I feel better about them right now than I would have if the season just went on uninterrupted. I mean, like, I know they were playing a little bit better before the pause happened and they had won three games in a row. You were still going to be hard-pressed to convince me that they were going to win their first-round matchup. I didn't really care who it was against. St. Louis, Dallas, I don't care who it was against. I don't think they would have won their first-round matchup had they continued to go like they had been going pretty much all season long. This pause, you know, you're 4.5 months off, you're coming back, and you're playing playoff hockey. All of a sudden you look around, I mean, what if Arvidsson's back to normal? What if Duchesne plays like he played in the playoffs last year? What if Ryan Johansson plays like the Ryan Johansson that he's been for the majority of his Predators career? All of a sudden, all those things happen. Roman Josi plays at the level he's played at all season long, and you get good goaltending. This team is just as dangerous as anybody in the Western Conference. So I feel a ton better about the Predators right now than I did while the season was going on. And maybe that's not justified. I don't know. We're going to find out here in about a week. But I certainly feel more confident in them now than I did before. Just because, we've talked about this a ton, Joe. My head tells me I've watched Matt Duchesne play hockey for a long time. I have watched Johansson and Forsberg and Arvidsson play hockey for a long time. I've seen every single game Arvidsson, Johansson, and Forsberg have ever played for the Predators. I know they're good hockey players. I know they didn't just suddenly forget how to play hockey. They're going to get back to that level at some point. It's very difficult for me to believe that all four of those guys are going to come back in this tournament and just not play well. Like, maybe not all four of them will, but I'm pretty confident that all four of them are not just going to go out there and stink up the joint. And if that's the case, I feel a ton better about this team now than I did before the pause. So maybe that's justified, maybe it's not, but that's certainly just the way I feel about it heading into this tournament.
Yeah, I mean, it's like preseason optimism, because it is like we're coming off an off season here, but it's sort of the idea that the pause really helped this team. I mean, it's like with, you know, with the Titans, with what they did last year, by if this was a normal camp year, but regardless, it's going to be camp going into the season. Like, everyone around here will have them going 13-3 by the time, because it's like, yeah, ooh, look at this guy, look at this guy, you know. But you're right. The Predators have, they've got guys who have done it before. And I think Arvidsson is one of the biggest reasons for thinking that this could be different than what we saw a lot of the year, because he looks different. So take that. And then if you buy into the idea that Ryan Johansson, one, understands that this has not been a good year and has really tried hard to figure it out and can do something about it, well, right there, you've got two things that should be better. We don't know about goaltending. We don't even know who's going to be goaltending for this team. But if those two things are better, then, you know, it's still, I think, chemistry with guys on lines and how they work together. You feel like those top two lines have a chance to do some good things. And look, 2017, there was not any indication that run was going to happen. I think the next year cemented that it wasn't just a fluky run, but still, that was the 8 seed. You know, that was the 16 seed.
Yeah.
In the playoffs. And it was like, yeah, they got in, they were okay, and then they got hot. So, I mean, that's another thing about this. I think anybody in that – look, could the Canadians catch fire and shock Pittsburgh and
sure.
Carey Price?
Carey Price, man.
I think it's going to be a wild, fun tournament, and we're going to see stuff like that. And the Preds are I think, in one good spot because – they do have talent. They do have a team on paper that should be able to compete, and no one's picking them to do anything. Everybody's picking them to beat Arizona, but that's it. We just had our Stanley Cup picks today. Like, no one has them as a dark horse or any of that stuff. So I think that's good psychologically.
Let's go to Ryan, who wants to weigh in on the Predators. Ryan, thanks for calling in to 102.5 The Game. Go ahead.
Good morning. Thanks for being back. I agree with you. I feel better about them now after the little break. Not only do you have guys refresh, injuries healed, Pekka's refresh and all that, but they're going with a new system. They're going in with John Hines' system now, which no one this season has seen. I know it's a short time to work with him, but he's going to implement his system now with these guys, and now they're going to implement this system into the playoff round, and these teams haven't seen the way the Preds use his system on the ice.
Hey, thanks for the call, Ryan. Appreciate it. I agree. I mean, yeah. I think the system part of it is a big deal from the standpoint of, you know, when you come in as a head coach on January 7th or whatever the date was that John Hines came in, once you get to that point in the season of January and February, especially the Predators this year, who I think had played the fewest amount of games before the All-Star break, well, that catches up to you in the back half. I mean, they got to the point where they were playing, I mean, pretty much every other day. It's very difficult to come in and implement everything you want to implement into your system at that point. That's been what's been so good for, I think, for John Hines about this period of time, this training camp he's been able to have. You can make adjustments. You have some information now on what your players are, what their strengths are, what their weaknesses are, and you can kind of adjust your system to that. So I'm interested to see, once they get rolling here, how different that system looks than it did back in the regular season when they really didn't have all that much time to play with it all that much.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point. And he came in and just about immediately identified some guys like that just weren't up to snuff.
Yeah.
That should have been. And so you have that going on too, and you've got a little bit of, it's not punitive, but it's like motivational, lineup changes, stuff like that. Now it's like he's had more time with the system and knowing his personnel, them knowing him. And I think it's like, look, You guys are playing together. You're playing together. Let's go. It's a very different feel than what it was when he came in after a fired coach.
615-737-1025. 615-737-1025. We'll take your calls and your text messages on the Predators. How do you feel about them heading into this series against Arizona? When we come back, we'll get into the goaltending conversation a little bit as well. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. That was Predators head coach John Hines talking about the goaltending situation. between Pecorine and UC Soros. Also my girl Taylor Swift. Fellow Hendersonville
Your
alum.
Buddy.
Yeah, my buddy Taylor Swift.
Great friends with Taylor Swift,
yeah,
aren't you?
I am.
Like the new album? You listen to that too?
You know, it's all right. I didn't think it was that great. But
oh wow.
My wife likes it.
Some friend this guy is. Look at this.
Is that from the new album?
No, that's from the last
the previous album.
Yeah, I thought so. Okay.
I didn't want to play. That new album's pretty sad from what I heard.
Really?
So, yeah.
I've heard some raves about it.
It's sad as in the songs are not really bump music worthy. Because they're so depressing.
It's not, yeah, the lead-ins are not great.
She's like a grunge artist now?
Yeah, a little bit. That's okay. Look, everything she does turns to gold, so there we are.
That's right.
Got a text in on the text line from our good friend Ultimate Predator. It says, Big Rob and Sexy Rexy, welcome back. Keep an eye on Rocco's modern line to carry some timely goals and keep the momentum. That's the bottom line, because the Ultimate Predator said so. Always appreciate our good friend, the Ultimate Predator, listening to the show. And that is a good point. That line of Rocco Grimaldi, Nick Bonino, Craig Smith was the best line the Predators had all season long in the regular season. I don't know if they're going to produce at the same rate offensively as they were, because they were at a really another level offensively. But that's one heck of a line to have as a third line that has that scoring pop with, you know, Bonino had a good season scoring goals. Craig Smith, you know, he's always going to get to that 20-goal mark. Love watching Rocco Grimaldi play with the speed he brings to the table. I think that's an excellent third-line option for the Predators.
No doubt. I mean, you know, Craig Smith is still a dangerous player. We know what Rocco Grimaldi did last year in the playoffs. I mean, he's a guy who, you know, he's just, you know, again, he's sort of your poor man's Arvidsson, who, when Arvidsson's hurt, isn't really a poor man's Arvidsson.
No, yeah.
But, you know, those guys, that is a sneaky important line that people should not sleep on. I'm reading some stats from Dom L.
Yes.
I will not. Athletics, Dom, he's got a really good preview. But five-on-five, Bonito and Grimaldi, team's two most effective scorers at a points per 60 rate of 2.49 and 2.3, respectively. Those were both top 50 in the league, and Smith was 1.91. So they outscored opponents 29-11 in five-on-five. With a 57.5% expected goals rate. Do I sound smart now? Reading
you do
all those
sound
stats?
Smart. That's a lot of math.
There you go. But you know that's an important line. And thanks, Ultimate Predator.
Yeah, I always love
Appreciate
our guy,
the
Ultimate
love.
Predator. He's great. That line is interesting to me because it's like the perfect combination of speed, skill, and like grit. Right? Like Craig Smith is a guy. He's got pretty good speed. He just works his butt off, like,
right,
all the time. Rocco Grimaldi, he's got great speed, works his butt off all the time. And Nick Bonino doesn't really have all that great of speed. He basically puts his head down, goes to the front of the net, and scores a bunch of goals that go in off his shin pad and his stick and turnaround shots like he's Michael Jordan. Like, I really like the makeup of that line.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
It's pretty great to have a guy like Bonino the way he's played this year as your number three center.
Yeah.
And by the way, in that intro, the Finnish reporter clip, that brings back such great memories. Of course, we won't have this during this playoff, but like during the playoffs, like, you know, the Finnish media following Pekka around, yeah, over the past years with like the huge tape recorders and,
yeah,
stuff. It's just, you got to love it, man.
It's a blast from the past.
You got,
man,
of course, a lot of Swedish media.
Oh, yeah.
Obviously.
This is like the Swedes team. Oh, there's like, yeah, 100 people.
Yeah, so
in the Predators organization,
one of many,
Swedish.
Yeah, yeah, one of many things we'll miss about the socially, yes, distanced playoffs.
Yeah, it's very much so. As far as the goaltenders are concerned, we've talked a lot about it. That's going to be a popular topic of conversation as we get into the real thing here later this week. I came out on my podcast yesterday, Locked On Predators, and said who my game one starter would be. I'm going UC Soros, and that's based on combined with, you know, what happened before the pause, how well he was playing, also with what I've seen in training camp so far. I still think he's dialed in. I still think he looks like he's the number one goaltender for the Predators. He's my game one starter. Would you go the same route with UC Soros for game one?
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, nothing's changed. When they started training camp, I wrote a column about why, and with the understanding that camp could have an impact on the decision. I never bought that it was going to make the decision. Like, this is just clean slate competition. Who's better? We're going to track everything, and whoever, if one of them is slightly better than the other, that's what we're going. I mean, that's not reality. But it's Stillman and I had many arguments about this. I was never saying that it was irrelevant. It was irrelevant. And I think Saros, from what I saw, a little better than Rene. But it's not like I thought it was like, whoa, huge gap. You know, it's just he's been the better goalie for a while now. And I understand there's a break. And I also understand 89 to nothing. That's 89 starts for Pekka. Zero for UC in the postseason. But I think it just makes sense. I think this is his time now. And I think, as we've talked about before, Robbie, that Pekka Rinne is almost assuredly going to be a part of a deep run if you make one. And I think it makes sense to start out with him in reserve, understanding that you may have to go to him maybe soon.
The other interesting part of this, and I heard Pierre McGuire from NBC Sports was on with Darren Donick at Chase, and they asked him about goaltending coming out of the gate and how, you know, in a typical training camp style session that you're going into October and you're flying off into the regular season, goaltending typically is ahead of the forwards. That's why a lot of times you see the goaltending start off really well, then the forwards get into the groove of things, they catch up. Now, defensemen, I think, really struggle at the start of the season, which is why a lot of times you see this wide-open hockey going back and forth in October. But we've seen it firsthand here with Pekka Rinne. I mean, the start of seasons typically, for him, go very well. He's typically playing really well at the start of the season. Conversely, the last two or three seasons, UC Saros has really struggled at the start of the season. I don't put a ton of stock into that. I think sometimes we overblow like the importance of that, but I'm not going to totally ignore it either. So what happens if Saros comes out in game one and it's a total clunker? You give up four goals, five goals. Do you go immediately to Rinne or do you give him another shot? I mean, you're talking about a five-game series here.
That's got to be – that is a really tough one, because let's say that happens and it's like, man, he just got shelled and we got to go to Pekka. So are you going to Pekka for a back-to-back? You're going to start Pekka Rinne out with a back-to-back?
At 37 years old?
You know, so you almost say, okay, please play well in this one, UC, and then, like, Pekka will do the third game. And there's so many different combinations of how this could go. But bottom line, best 3 out of 5.
Yeah.
It's a best 3 out of 5, and you best win this series. So this is it could be really, really interesting, really, really tough on John Hines.
Yeah, and look, there's going to be so much pressure for whoever loses game one, whatever, if it's Rick Tocchet of the Coyotes or John Hines of the Predators. Sometimes I think you got to guard against, like, overthinking, because you can do that easily in a 7-game series in a playoff when, you know, say you're the home team, you lose game one. All of a sudden, all these different thoughts go running through your mind. Oh, my gosh, we have to win game two. We're going to be, you know, up a creek here. Sometimes that's going to be even more amplified in a 5-game series. Sometimes I think it's about kind of keeping your head about you, not overreacting to one game and just kind of trusting the process that you've gone through. That's a lot easier said than done, and I'm interested to see, especially in these qualifying rounds that are 5 games, how quick coaches are to just pull the plug on their goaltenders and make the switch, especially with teams like both Arizona and Nashville, who have goaltenders that they both feel pretty confident about in one and two. And like, you got to be able to really be confident in the decisions you make as coach.
Yeah, I mean, 4 goalies in this series is certainly a possibility. And it is. And, you know, you bring up an interesting thing there too, Robbie. I think sometimes in a playoff series, you think of things in terms of home road a little bit. Like you said, oh, we can't lose another home game here.
Right.
And this is now just, it's everybody in the same conditions. I don't know exactly what that means, but it has to change just in general the way you go about a playoff series, doesn't it?
Yeah. I mean, like, the only advantage now to being, quote unquote, the home team is getting the last line change. Like, that's it.
Yeah.
There's no other added benefit at this point. other than having the last change. And that does have advantages for sure, but it's not the be-all, end-all in the world of hockey. You can work around not having the last change. So I am interested to see what sort of an impact that has. But having said that, Joe, like looking back at the playoffs the last few years in the NHL, it's been basically 50-50 on home and road teams winning. So
right.
I'm not sure how much of an impact home ice advantage has in the Stanley Cup playoffs anyway. I'm not going to say it's totally irrelevant because we've seen examples firsthand here in Nashville how it can be relevant. But it's not like home teams in the playoffs have just been winning, you know, 70% of the games. That's not been the case at all.
And think about how many huge, huge road wins, you know, teams that have won the Cup actually have had.
Yeah.
But like the Preds, like the Stanley Cup Final of 17, that was like a whoa, what a difference in each building. How different were the Preds? And then you go to Pittsburgh and it's a nightmare, right? So that, but yeah, right. Most series are not like that.
When we come back, can Roman Josi keep up the absolutely superhuman pace that he was on before the pause? Can he keep that up when the Predators face off against Arizona? And what do we make of his chances to win the Norris Trophy? We'll get into that next. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Man, that does my heart good. Bring me some Travis Tritt all day long, Munson. That's some good stuff right there.
I don't know about all day long, but I'm cool. I'm cool with like one per like month or show.
One per month.
Travis Tritt, like, he's a classic.
I like Travis Tritt. I'm just saying, like, there's only one band that I like bump music wise that I'll play every show, probably. And that's AC/DC. Because AC/DC is every song is a bump music song.
Oh, no question.
Every song is a pump up, like, let's go, let's get this show on the road kind of song. So AC/DC could play a lot. I can't play BC Boys and Travis Tritt a lot. I got to sprinkle it in there.
That's
every
fine.
Now and then.
Yeah. I can see that.
So you feel better now with the Travis Tritt? Like you?
That's a great day to be alive, man. Yeah.
How did you feel after the Beastie Boys? Did you feel good? Did you feel
Yeah. I mean, that's one of my favorite Beastie Boys songs. So
really?
It is.
You love deep cuts. I like deep cut Joe.
Well, yeah, you know, if you really like a band, musical artist, usually you end up liking
their
stuff that isn't constantly in rotation, right?
Like I always, so I'm a huge Outkast fan. Outkast is my favorite group of all time, of any genre. And when people ask me what's my favorite Outkast song, like I love So Fresh, So Clean and Miss Jackson, but I never say those because it's like, I don't want to come off as like, you know, I know a lot about Outkast, but those are my two favorite songs, which are the two most mainstream songs. So
you didn't say Hey Ya, at least.
Yeah. I do not like that song. That is my least favorite Outkast song. So I usually say like Spody Odie, Dopealicious, and Jezebel, and Players Ball. I love Players Ball. Southern Playalistic, Cadillac. You know those are my favorite Outkast songs because I have to show people that I don't just listen to mainstream Outkast. It's Outkast in general, Aquemini, all that.
Right, early stuff.
So it's all about the deep cuts. So, you know.
If you like an artist really and you get and listen to their albums, I don't know when listen to albums anymore, right? Not that much.
Depends
on who it is.
Yeah, but yeah, you're going to end up liking some of that.
Like if it's Kendrick, like his last album, I listen to like every single song on that album. Like that's just a great album. So, but some artists, they're just like, they got like two songs that are good.
Yeah, like Toto. We were talking about Toto earlier. Like I'm not listening.
Not going
to the
deep into Toto.
Albums. Okay. Yeah, let's play Africa and Hold the Line, and Rosanna,
and Georgie Porgy.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, go a little deeper for Georgie Porgy. Toto. I mean, who knew that we were going to talk about Toto so much today?
Hey, this is a versatile show, man. We talk about a lot of things. That's what we do here.
That's right.
On Morning Drive. Joe, Roman Josi. We all know how good he was in the regular season. He was outstanding. The best season I have ever seen from a Nashville Predators defenseman. And in my personal opinion, when you weigh the numbers, when you weigh the impact he had on a team, I believe Roman Josi should be the Norris Trophy winner. I'm not sure how you feel, whether or not you feel the same way, but I believe he should be the Norris Trophy winner. The question is, can he play at that same level in Edmonton that he did all regular season long? Because if he does, I mean, you're talking about one of a handful of guys in the league that could change the game on a dime the way he does.
Yeah, it's a great question. First of all, on the Carlson, Josi, you know, competition. Obviously, Carlson a little bit better offensive numbers, but defensive numbers are way in Yossi's favor. I mean, John Carlson is, like, to me, you'd like a defenseman to have some good defensive zone attributes.
That would be
John
nice.
Carlson is a tremendous offensive weapon as a defenseman. I think Roman Yossi is a much more well-rounded player. I know it's at the risk of being a homer. I think it's pretty clear, and I think he's going to win it. And yeah, he's the one guy we go into this thing. It's like, did the break hurt him? Like, can he keep going the way he's played?
Yeah.
I would suspect he'll be fine.
If training camp is any indication, he'll be fine.
He looked like Roman Yossi. I just think he's a great player at the top of his game right now. So, but it's certainly going to be very important. And of course, with Yossi, I still also I think of like the power play and how. Are they going to figure some things out? That's one thing with John Hines and all this time. You know, I think they've really worked hard to try to just diversify that power play and do different things and be less robotic and more fluid. And I don't know why that has been such a problem for them in the last couple seasons, but it has been. And he's a guy who is just so fluid and creative at all times.
Like you would think a guy like Yossi would be one of the elite power play weapons in the whole league. Just with all the different things he can do. I think he can be. But if you look at the numbers and the way the Predators' power play has gone the last 2 years specifically, they don't bear that out. And I don't think it has anything to do really with his lack of ability on the power play or the team's lack of ability on the power play. They just got, like, the robotic is the perfect word. They just got so repetitive in what they were doing on the power play. It's so easy to scout. I mean, you knew at some point that puck's going to end up at the top of the blue line, and they're going to fire away.
Right.
And John Hines, I think, did a really good job of coming in and trying to change that up a little bit, the way they attack it. And you heard Pete Weber yesterday on the show. I mean, 5 out of their last 15 chances on the power play, they converted on, which is a really good percentage
in
the NHL. So, hopefully, if you're a Predators fan, they can keep that going, not necessarily at that percentage because that's pretty high, but a consistent 20-21% power play, that's pretty good. That's going to win you some games in the playoffs.
Yeah, like not like, say, I don't know, 0 for, what, 19? Is that what they were against the Stars?
I think it's 0 for 19.
You know, I mean,
it's not going to get it done.
And actually, like, Yossi's a great – he's exhibit A for why – that was, to me, it has to be a coaching criticism and a system criticism because he's a player who, like, it's like him in that power play, the power play sucked his power out of him, you know? Hey, like, he's a guy who should absolutely be in a power play, a very dangerous and effective player, and it didn't matter who they had out there. But obviously they had more D-men out there. Like you said, it was just bring it out and smash one to the net and try to go get the rebound.
That works every now and then if you get Shea Weber. I mean, he could put one through the net. But
yeah, I mean, and P.K. Subban sometimes. I mean, look, Ryan Ellis has been a great weapon, like from the left circle. But, yeah, they've just got to be more creative and just try different things. So I think that's been a big point of emphasis, and that's a huge thing to watch. And he has got to be a big part of that.
No question about it, and not only him, but Ryan Ellis as well. I'm glad you brought him up because it's no secret. The Predators really missed him when he was out for that month and a half or however long it was after he took the elbow to the head from Corey Perry, which, by the way, interested to watch that on Thursday against Dallas because this is not going to be, at least I don't think it's going to be, like some exhibition preseason-style game that we typically see in September where there's not a ton of intensity to it. You're just kind of going through the motions. I mean, you have to get yourself ready to play on Sunday in a game that means everything. So I think this is going to be, at least from the Predators' standpoint, a pretty meaningful exhibition game against Dallas.
Of course, you also imagine like getting someone key hurt in this thing.
I know.
It's really tricky. It's really interesting. It's just like everything with this. It's just so different. But I suspect you're right. You can't just treat it like your typical preseason game. I mean, you know, these guys, I think John Hines, and I'm sure it was like this with a lot of teams, you know, because you have a compressed period of time. But I thought, man, he really pushed them in like the scrimmages we saw. I mean, they were doing just straight up, this is a game.
Yeah.
And obviously you've got to incorporate different guys who aren't going to be playing in the postseason to have a game. But know, they've worked really hard to try to be ready. Game shape. Everybody talks about game shape in any sport you talk, you know, you talk about. And this is a very short period of time to get to game shape.
Yeah. Especially when you, like, you haven't been on the ice, a lot of them, but for the, like, the last month after taking 3-4 months off. I
mean, and now it's the most important hockey. Because let's face it, in October, yeah, it's exciting and the season has started and you're playing real games and they count and you're playing hard. But it's not, oh, you are in, this is your whole season in the playoffs right now. This is the most important hockey you're going to play all year. That is a build up through this long grind. It's just, I don't know, but hey, you know what? I've heard people make the case that these bubbles could increase quality of play too because you don't have the wear and tear that you would have otherwise. And so maybe that'll be the case. Maybe we'll end up getting better hockey and basketball in these bubbles because these guys are just going to their room, sleeping, and focusing on the sport.
Yeah, you're not having to travel. I mean, you're not making any trips from Nashville to Anaheim 5 times in a series. So that certainly, there's something to that. For sure. We saw it a couple of years ago, like 4 years ago now, when the Predators went to Anaheim the first round, San Jose the second round. Not going to have to worry about that this time. So it may be kind of a different kind of wear and tear. I mean, from a mental standpoint, it's going to be difficult just to be in the same place all the time. You're going to have back-to-back games in these playoffs where typically you don't really have to deal with that. So that's going to be different. But the travel part of it is a big deal, I think. So it's, you get done playing, you go up to your room. That's pretty much it.
I mean, maybe grab some free Tim Hortons.
Yeah.
You know, whatever the case may be.
Yeah, just stay away from chicken wings. From wherever. Yeah,
I hope they have some wings up there. I'd love to know what Edmonton wings are like.
But I watched NBA scrimmages, and it's weird to look at the scores because a lot of those scores are like 80 to like, it's like,
y'all play defense?
Yeah, no, but it's a mixture of both. So it's actually like, it's defense, but it's also, it's a lot of sloppy play. Like, there's been guys who usually don't miss free throws missing free throws.
Yep.
And it's kind of still, it's still a little sloppy, even though J.R. Smith and Dion Waiters were balling last night for the Lakers.
I was enjoying some J.R. Smith in that Wizards game last night.
Yes, yeah. that was incredible. But I think
just give Deion Waiters a little bit of time.
Yeah, just Deion Waiters.
He'll go the other way too. Trust me.
No. Hey, you watch yourself there, Heat fan.
Big Deion Waiters guy, huh?
Yeah, he's
got a Waiters Island T-shirt.
Really?
Yeah, I do.
Nice.
Wow. Okay.
But
frustrating.
It is. But it's not frustrating for me because we got him now. But it is a little sloppy. But it's also like they're intensifying it a little bit more. And I think it's just because they have to. So I'm pretty sure that first scrimmage that every NHL team is going to have to go through, you know, the NBA is different. They're having multiple scrimmages. You know, you only get one in the NHL. So that intensity has to be picked up at least in a couple periods before you kind of lay low a little bit. With the NBA, I'm pretty sure we saw guys sit out with like LeBron and AD. So, you know, once they get that, you know, game flow back. So I think that's the same thing you're going to see with the NHLs. They may play guys for maybe a period, maybe two, maybe one and a half, but that third period just kind of ease off the ice a little bit.
Well, also like from a goaltending, like we were talking about earlier, let's say John Hines has made his decision on who's going to start game one. Let's say it's Juuse Saros. Do you play him the whole time in this exhibition game? Do you give him 2 periods and give Peck a 1? Like, how do you approach it? Like, how much does Juuse Saros need to be ready for game 1 on Sunday?
Will there be a tell on Thursday of who's starting?
Are they playing, like, a period and a half each? Like, what happens?
Yeah, because I guess that's a good point. Like, if one of them plays way more than the other, I guess that's probably the starter, right? I mean, you get 2 days off.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's not like you're going to see Roman Josi play all 3 periods of a scrimmage.
No.
Like, I think he plays probably a couple minutes and then, all right, get him off the ice.
Yeah.
He's done.
He's ready.
He's good.
Much
like, same thing for the Lakers. It's like, why play LeBron James and AD when they're the best players in the league? Like, you know, we don't need to play them. Like, Kawhi Leonard, he played, but he didn't play much. You know, Paul George, he played for the Clippers, but not much. So, you know, Giannis is different because he's coming off an injury. So, obviously, they want to get him back, you know, up and going. And same thing for Zion, probably. But for the most part, you know what guys are pretty much game ready. I think from the NBA perspective, it's a little easier. For hockey, it's harder.
Yeah.
But
you can't play a whole bunch of games.
Yeah, you can't.
Don't count in hockey.
Exactly. So it's just that's going to be the crucial point of it, of how much do you play them during this scrimmage.
When we come back, the Tennessee Titans are officially opening up training camp today. We'll discuss that next. What do we make of not only the team this year, but the environment that they're going to be surrounded in. We'll talk about that next. This is Morning Drive live from the Wholesale Inc. studios, powered by RumbleOn.com here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
What's up, everybody? It's Bretzky, and America is turning 250. And I can't think of a better way to celebrate that than playing on an American-owned social casino, SpinQuest.com. With all of your favorite games, live craps, bubble craps, live blackjack, there's no better place to play for free and win real cash prizes. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.